right. Well, good morning. That was kind of weak. I'm just going to throw it out there. Good morning. I tell you what, I don't know about you guys, but maybe some of you are joining us for the first time since we've begun to gather, 4 weeks ago. I was sitting here closing my eyes listening to you guys singing Old Rugged Cross. It just sounds amazing. It sounds really, really good. If you got a Bible, would you grab it? Turn to Luke chapter 10. We'll be there in just a minute. We are in a series, if you're joining us for the first time, called Reset. We're looking at areas of our life that we need to hit the reset button on. A lot of this is brought on by some prayers and things that have come through this pandemic that we're still in, trying to figure this thing out of life, of just kind of so much of our life and our day, our schedules. I even compared it to, I like Star Wars, but whatever. To Star Wars, when they're in the trash compactor scene and it feels like the walls are closing in on them, and it just feels like you watch the news, you look around, and we've all been affected, whether we like it or not, in good or bad, all of us, at some point or fashion, we've had something taken from us, something in schedule, something in our kids' life, maybe it was graduation, maybe it was a sport, maybe it was something, we've all had something that's kind of been cleared out, if you will. And some of us are wrestling through that. We're still trying to grind through that. It's tough. It's hard. It's maybe you're okay with it. Maybe you're thinking, man, this is tough. I'm just trying to figure this out. I'm just wanting some normalcy. We talked for the last 3 weeks on this idea of unity, on what we need to be as a church. In Romans chapter 14 into 15, about how we all approach things different, these secondary issues. Not these things that are non-negotiables, the things we don't compromise, the gospel of Jesus, but on how we get out of this pandemic and get back to whatever normal is supposed to be, okay? It's all different. There may be something that for you and your family, you think, man, this is important. I'm just tired. I want to ship my kids off to somebody and go do something or go whatever. Can I get a name? I'm just kidding. I'm not going to say that. But just life gets tough. Don't amen that, parents. Your kids are there. But life gets tough, and there's some that are just thinking, hey, there's some good. There's been some bad. There's been some things I've lost. There's been some things that I haven't been able to have for a while because our life has been stripped down to it, the bare minimum. And so today I want to talk to you. We're going to start a little bit this idea of called margin, and I'm going to describe that in just a minute and what it looks like about this time in our life that we have where this idea of busyness, okay? Some of us, we miss. If you're like me sometimes, I do better when I'm busy and clicking and going, okay? Some of y'all maybe agree with that. Some of you think, I don't do well when I'm busy. But I like to have things to do. You could ask my wife, when there's nothing to do, I get restless. I'm like, I need to mow the yard. I need to do something. And she wants me to clean. That's okay. But there's things that need to get done and go and do. And whether we want to admit it or not, we have to, that the walls have come closing in on us, and this is not to be taken lightly. Just the seniors graduates, don't want to offend, graduates, this is not to be taken lightly. Graduation, your last year of school, those who are in athletics, I mean, you've lost your spring sport. I mean, everything's just been flipped upside down. It's not been easy. It's not to be taken lightly. I was talking to a guy that lives out of town this week, and he had all these summer plans. Maybe you did. Maybe you still have them. But he has a different budget than I do. Apparently, he's traveling to Disneyland and going to Europe. I'm like, you got a different world, different budget than I have. But he was talking about even trips with his grandkids. It's over. It's done. I'm having to postpone it until next year. Hopefully, it's going to happen because everything about it's just changed. And here's what happens, maybe not for you, but for me. It's like this desire for normalcy, this desire to get back to busy, get back to life. And it will come. But I want to be clear that it's not exactly easy to cope with. Let me define margin for us, because we're going to talk about this for a couple of weeks. Margin is the amount allowed beyond that which is needed. I have a book I've been working through this week by Dr. Richard A. Swenson, and I pulled a lot of really good stuff from it. But basically, margin, you could think of a profit margin, you could think of whatever. So it's the amount available or what's left beyond what's necessary. It's the difference between what you have, hear this, and what you need. Now, this is a relative term because everybody's, quote, need, end quote, is different than somebody else. There may be somebody here today that says, well, I need this, or I need this, or I don't want that. So it's all relative. So hear this. This idea of margin in our lives that we can find ourselves if we are not so careful with no margin in our life, so busy, so chasing our tail, and longing to go back to that we can miss out on some of the things that God wants to show us. Let me give you a longer quote here by Swenson. It helps me a lot. Listen to what he says. Margin is the gap between rest and exhaustion. I'm kind of setting this up for the next couple weeks, so bear with me. It's the space between breathing freely and suffocating. Margin is the opposite of overload. If we're overloaded, we have no margin. Most people are not quite sure when they pass from margin to overload. Threshold points are not easily measurable, and they're also different for other people in different circumstances. We don't always want to be underachievers, heaven forbid, so we fill our schedules uncritically. Options are as attractive as they are numerous, and we overbook. What he's saying here, and it's so true, that there are unavoidable busyness is unavoidable business in life. We all have that. But what he's talking about, what's necessary and what's needed, and there has to be some margin in there. There's got to be some room, some examples of some space in our life that we can focus on the things that do matter and not miss out on things that do. I describe it like this. It's this idea of what life looks without margin. Some of you have been there. Some of you may be there right now. Some of you had this post or pre-pandemic, and you're going to have it post-pandemic. But it's the basic idea of running through life in chaos, in busyness, and you're simply spread too thin. Now, don't raise your hands, but let me just talk honestly for a minute. Have you ever found yourself where you're just going, 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 and you find yourself doing a lot of things, but you're not really doing much very well? Doing a lot of things about average. You just feel like frustrated, think, man, at work, I'm not doing this, my kids, my this, or activities are going, and you just feel like you're just spread too thin. You ever heard that term? And you feel like you're just okay at a lot of stuff, but you're not really doing a whole lot well. That's kind of how I feel sometimes. And for me, let me share my heart, what's happened. There's been a lot of this idea of this pandemic that I've not really liked. I don't like things taken from me. Anybody else control freak here? Can I get an amen? Anybody else? I'm just kidding. I don't like things to be taken from me. But you know what? It happened. Seniors, your graduation was changed. Juniors that had a spring sport, you lost it. It's over. There's no redos. It's over. Kids in sports, everything's done. It is crazy, and I'm praying and hoping we get on the other side of this. But if all we're going to do is to wallow in what we're missing and not think of, God, what are you wanting to show me in this? I said it in week one of this whole summer series. If God is sovereign over all things, he reigns and he rules. And I know when we look around, it looks like that God has taken a break. He's not. But when we look around and think, if God is allowing a global pandemic, surely, if the scriptures tell us that he does all things for the good of those who are called according to his good and purposes, surely there's something, right? Surely there's something in this that we can glean and find some wisdom as things have been taken from you. And if David's heart is only about wanting to get back to what I had taken from me, I'm missing it. And so we got to find this idea of margin. And sometimes we wear busyness like a badge of honor, right? How you been? Oh, I'm busy. It's kind of a big deal. Got a lot on my plate. Have you ever talked to anybody? Let me just talk turkey for a minute. I don't even know what that means. Have you ever had anybody come up to you and say, hey, Josh, how's life going? And you think, man, things are really not going real. I'm just kind of purposely trying to slow down, trying to get some off my plate, trying to slim the old schedule down. People would look at you like you're talking Greek to them. I've talked to people that I'm thinking, you're not as busy as you made it sound like you are. But it's something, it's like our chest puffs up and we think, I've been busy. And your voice drops a little bit. See what I just did there? I've been busy. That's all I got. What is it about that? What is it about like a badge of honor? Like I'm kind of a big deal, guys. Can I confess something to you? When I'm busy, I struggle at a lot of things. And there are times in life where it's unavoidable. There's things, if you don't have kids and you think you're busy, then you have kids, you're welcome. Good luck. You know, if you're single and don't have kids, you know, or whatever. But the thing is there's unavoidable things that happen. Things get busy. Kids have activities, things that happen. But what are we learning in the process in this whole idea where that's all been taken from me or changed? Could we be such a desire to get busy that we miss out on what's in the stillness? I've had it told to me this. Look at me real quick. Sometimes I've been told that we are afraid. I don't like this. This hurts my heart. We're afraid of what God might reveal to us if we're still and relax for a little bit. We're afraid. We're going to keep so busy. What's God going to show to us? And today, we're going to talk about margin. We're going to talk about this idea of the space between what is must, what is needed, and what is there. And I'll tell you this, and I'm going to get to our text in just a minute. It's kind of intro. I've done ministry full-time in a church for 18 years. Today is my 9-year anniversary to be at this church. Praise God, I hope I'm here a long time. But I'll tell you this. I have never, in 18 years of full-time pastoral ministry, I've never, from children to youth to adults, single, married, I've never counseled or ministered to people because they've got too much margin in their life. Not once. Not once did I have a marriage or somebody come in where their marriage is on the rocks and say, no, we just got too much free time and we're just spending too much time together as a couple. You can laugh. That's okay. It's silly. I've never had one parent that comes in and says, my kids, I don't know what, the wheels have come off. All we do is spend time together as a family. What are we going to, that never happens. But I can tell you stories of 9 years as a youth pastor and 9 years of being here. Well, I have talked to couples and marriages and adults and children and students of when life gets so hectic and spread too thin, something will break. And in my life, I find myself justifying things of the things that I'm busy. I'm important. I got to be in doing. I got to do that. I'm this. I'm that. Or whatever I've convinced myself. And I look around and something's going to suffer, if you will. Remember what I said? Do a lot of things, but not doing very well. In that book, Swinson says that margin is semi-visible or semi-visible, however you want to say it. Because living without it doesn't cause you, hear this, doesn't cause sensory pain or deep-seated subjective ache. It is interpreted differently. And this is what's so hard about it. Because you know what? You're busy may not be what's best for me. Go see Romans 14 in the last couple of weeks. Your life, your family, your schedule, it may not be what's best for mine, and that's okay. You're busy and your job and your work and your marriage and your kids maybe. It's not about saying what works for you has to work for me. Because you know what, when I hit my finger and I smash something, I have a pain, I got to deal with that. But the problem is sometimes we don't see the destruction that busyness in our schedules can sometimes bring. So to focus, hear me on this before we read our text, to focus less on these subjective things, I want to look at some biblical principles here. We're going to look at a familiar story in Luke chapter 10. You're going to know this story because busyness is a broad topic. And today we're going to talk about busyness and schedules and things like that. But I want us to see something. If we're not careful, I can't tell you what to do or not do. But I can tell you this is that what we're going to see in the scriptures today, sometimes our busyness can make us miss Jesus. And when we miss Jesus, it's game over. So if you would stand with me, I'm going to read a short text. You're probably going to know this frontwards and backwards. Luke chapter 10, let me read, we'll pray, we'll go through it together. We're going to go through the text. I'm going to offer some biblical imperatives at the end and some very practical things today. You'll know this story when I read it. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Let's pray together, and then we'll walk through this text together. If you would, take a deep breath, exhale. And somehow in your own heart, would you do something? Would you just ask the Lord to speak to you that somehow something that is said today or not said, that the Spirit of God might change you? I can't do it, but the Spirit of God can, that he might move in a way that we could all leave here, maybe challenged and maybe different than we were when we got here. If you don't mind, pray for me. Father, what a privilege it is to come and gather as a church family. And I'm so excited. I know we have guests here today. I'm so excited to look out and see some new faces and old faces. And God, above all, would your Spirit move in this place, that you would do what only you can do. I cannot change anybody in this room. I can't even change myself. But you can. I pray that if anybody who can hear my voice today, that we would not maybe push against what you're trying to do today, but just be receptive, that maybe, just maybe, that there is something you want to teach us today, that we can apply to our lives and we can be different. We ask it in the great name of Jesus. Amen. You may be seated. I said this is a familiar text. I'm sure you've read it. Maybe you know it, the story of Mary and Martha. But one point needs to be made right off the bat from the very beginning. Martha and Mary evidently knew Jesus, and they were glad to welcome him into their home or to the home. It's obvious that they were thrilled to have a visitor. Maybe you understand that. Maybe you hadn't had anybody in your house for a while because of quarantine. You think, hey, we can see people. It's kind of nice. Come on in. Use some sanitizer. I'm just kidding. It helps us in this text, if I could just frame it out for you. It helps us to know that this incident, if you will, if that's even the right word, it takes place 6 months before Jesus is killed. Okay, we're in the stage, there's the inauguration of Jesus, the popularity of Jesus, and the opposition. There's three major phases of Jesus' life. And Jesus has now turned his face towards Jerusalem. He's about 2 miles out, and he's on the final tour, if you will, of various towns and villages. Jesus, fully God, fully man, knows what awaits him, and he sets his face towards Jerusalem, and he's going to pay the price for you and for me for our sin. It's also important to know that there's, honestly, I hate to say it, but there's really nothing particularly, that's a hard word to say, difficult about this text. It's very straightforward. Jesus comes to a home, Martha reacts one way, Mary acts another, Jesus comments on the difference between them, yet it is, in its simplicity, it's profound if we'll hear it today. Look at verse 38. Jesus and his disciples were on their way. He came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home. It's Martha's home, okay? You with me? It's Martha's home. Sometimes we talk about Martha. She's the hostess, and that's a big deal. But let me do this. Jesus wasn't a homeowner. He traveled. He was going from place to place, and this timing is important. He was at the peak of persecution. He was crucified 6 months later. His time in the flesh was limited. Let me back up. I don't want anybody to go foul, Pastor. He's not limited. His time was coming to an end on this earth, so he didn't travel alone. He had 12 of his closest friends. He came to a village called Bethany, and he's 2 miles outside of Jerusalem. And he enters in verse 39. He says that we get to the point where Martha owned a house, and she comes in and with her sister Mary, and they host Jesus. But look at 39 as we move forward. She had a sister, Martha did, called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was, what does your Bible say right there? Say it out loud. Distracted. Martha was distracted. The King James says cumbered. I don't know if you have a different translation. By all of the preparations that had been made, or that had to be made, excuse me. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work all by myself? Tell her to help me. Now, let's talk just for a second. Raise your hand if you are the youngest of a sibling. Okay? We're all the oldest? Okay, good. All right, that's okay. Raise it proud. Let's unite real quick. I'm the youngest. What do we always do when something doesn't go our way, whether older brother or sister, and something happens, and we finally had enough? I can't physically beat you up or take you, but you know what I can do? I can do what? I could tell. Right? I'm going to tell mom. I don't have to tell dad, I know. I'm going to tell mom, did you see what just happened? This is what's going on here. All the stuff's going on. And all of a sudden, Martha was so distracted by the plans, not that were made, that had to be done, these preparations and all these things. We'll talk about that in just a minute. She came to Jesus and she ratted her sister out. And not only that, Jesus, go tell her to help me. Telling Jesus what to do. Who's going to do that? I'm going to tell on you, and I'm going to tell Jesus to tell you to come help me with all this stuff. You're just sitting at Jesus' feet, wasting all your time doing nothing. I'm doing all this stuff. I got stuff in the oven. They didn't have ovens. I don't know what they're doing, but they're cooking. And they're doing all these things. And so Luke writes of two sisters. Mary sits at the feet. Martha was distracted or cumbered by all of the things that had to get done. And in this culture, women weren't always, but just now starting to be encouraged to learn. So Mary was a sponge. She wanted to soak up all of this knowledge that Jesus was teaching. And Martha wasn't a bad person. She wasn't a pagan who didn't care. She knew and loved Jesus. It was her house. She got distracted on all the things that needed to be done to serve him and to prepare a meal and to be a hostess. And notice what she did. She went from distracted to worried to frustrated to irritated to tattletale. That's not a biblical word, but it'll fit, right? You ever notice that when you're so busy, distracted, all of a sudden you get really ugly about other people? what they're doing to you, what they've done to this, and so, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm going to tell, and if they were your brother or sister, you'd go tell mom and dad. This is what I need you to hear, because Martha is not a bad person. Please understand that. But this text is more than just teaching to say Martha was a servant leader in the whole. That's not what the entirety of the text is about. Yes, she was. She was a hostess. She was awesome. She wanted to serve Jesus, but Jesus himself spoke into that. So she does what all siblings do. They're mad. They go tell. Jesus, I'm here busting it. She's here sitting here at your feet, just relaxing. A lot of scholars believe she might have washed, that Mary may have washed Jesus' feet and then was sitting at his feet just soaking it in. Don't you care? She's just being a lazy bum. I'm in there working. Remember when I said busyness is a badge of honor sometimes? Think that was the case in the text here? Think it was kind of like, look what I'm doing here. I'm busy. I'm busting. I'm a hard-working girl. Verse 40 says, cumbered. To be cumbered is to be heavily burdened. And in the Greek, it means peraspeo, which means, hear this, to be pulled 1,000 directions. Now, if I sat in a room with you and I talked, you could probably tell me a time in your life where you felt, I just felt like I'm being pulled 1,000 directions. My kids, my marriage, my work, my finances, my whatever, just all kinds of stuff in life, and you just feel like you're pulled 1,000 directions. But this is the point here, is that Martha is frantic, becoming very busy, then burdened, and in her mind, thousands of directions being pulled. And she's not doing something bad. And now hear this, let me just kind of talk between the text here. Our busyness, or my busyness, may not be doing bad things, okay? Are you with me this morning? May not be doing bad things, it doesn't mean, but you can do good things and be distracted. Would you agree with me this morning that there is nothing innately about what Martha is doing physically that is, quote, bad? Nothing wrong with it. The word preparations, you can go back and you can break that down to, I'm not going to get into all of it, but you can break it down to serve a table, to do ministry, or even the term deacon can be tied to that as well. I'm just serving the Lord. Can I tell you how many pastors or people in ministry that their marriages fall apart because they're so busy serving other people that they forget their own kids and their own wife? Can I tell you stories that I've read about that have kids when they're teenagers literally and physically kicking the building of a church because they hate it, because it took their dad away from their family for all this time? Now, that's not just for pastors. That could be work. It could be life. It could be whatever. I hate that. I hate what they do. I hate because it took my mom or dad, it took them away. Now you're thinking, that's dramatic. Pastor, you're just trying to make a point. Yes, but it's real. I told you earlier, 18 years of ministry, I've never had anybody that's come in and say, hey, we're so busy, but my walk with Jesus is great. My kids, we're doing great. I'm overwhelmed. I pulled 1,000 directions, but it's the best time of my life. We're living our best life now. See, Satan's a schemer. He's not just going to try to hit you or lure you away with something as obvious as your work, chasing your kids or whatever, he's going to try to use other things. Yes, family, try to divide with whatever. He's going to try to do things that are going to be subtle. But the bottom line, what Satan would love to do is get us so preoccupied with good things that we forsake the main thing. And just in case you think that maybe I'm pulling too much here, look at verse 41. Look at what Jesus says to her. Her mind is being pulled 1,000 directions. Satan's going to try to thwart what God's desiring for you. But look what Jesus says. Martha, Martha. Now, this isn't a Brady Bunch thing, okay? Can I say that? This isn't a Martha, Martha, Martha kind of a thing or whatever. This is a sincere, to repeat a name is to show tenderness, okay? Tenderness and compassion is as far as like grabbing a child by the cheeks and saying, hey, listen, listen. Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried. For some, this could be maybe what we come from, maybe right now, maybe what awaits. You are worried and upset about many, many things. But few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary's chosen what's better. And it will not be taken from her. Jesus tenderly talks to her, talks to Martha and says, you're all over the place. Somebody pour into your life that cares about you, say, hey, you are all over the map. You're everywhere right now. Husbands, wives, you ever had somebody pour into your life that actually cares about you, say, hey, you're kind of everywhere. Are you okay? It's everywhere. hearts divided, minds scattered, all this. And I love this because did you see that Jesus did this contrast between the many things and the one thing? Martha's pulled in every direction. But Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus, and she's focused on him alone. Every time, I'm just going to kind of confess and kind of lighten the mood for just a minute. There's an old movie called City Slickers. Anybody ever seen that movie? Raise your hand if you've ever seen the movie City Slickers. I'm dating myself, okay? I'm not saying it's a really like a Academy Award, Billy Crystal kind of thing, but do you remember there was, what was the cowboy in that show? Was it Curly? Anybody, raise your hand again, because I'm going to call you out in front of everybody. I'm just kidding. There was a cowboy that was in, his name is Curly. I feel like every guy, every cowboy has a guy named Curly in it or whatever. But remember he always said, he goes, the secret to life, it's just one thing. And he was like, what's that one thing? Remember that part? Okay, no, not really. We'll watch it today. Okay, but every time I see this, it's like Jesus is saying, hey, you're worried about all this stuff. You're scattered everywhere. And you're everywhere made different than somebody else is everywhere. But Mary's worried about the one thing, sitting at the feet of Jesus. So we can justify our busyness. And even in this room today, you can sit there and you can maybe tune me out and say, David, you don't know my life, my work, my family, my kids. That's great. It's, remember, Romans 14 and 15, it's different for everybody. But maybe worse, we could be blinded by it in such a way that our life, that if we weren't busy, we would be, as our kids would say, if they're not busy, they're going to be bored. I say that every year when school's out, it's like literally May 30th, school's out, I'm already bored. And then they go mow the yard, and they're all of a sudden they're not bored anymore. See, we can do this. Our calendars, hear this, let me get practical. Our calendars have been cleared. They're starting to come back, and that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. I've had conversations with so many people in this town and out there just asking questions. I've confessed my heart from 4 weeks ago when I said, our family, we've had more meals together than we have in the last 7-8 months. Spending time with kids, spending time with doing things. But also hear this, and this is kind of my heart sometimes, where I just want to get back to what? Rhymes with normal. Anybody with me this morning? Rhymes with normal. Normal. I want to get back to my life. I want to get back to all these things. I just want to start adding these things in, and I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. Remember, they're not bad things. Because the world, hear this according... taking off of what Jesus, the world, when life gets hectic, would say this, don't just sit there, hear this, don't just sit there, do something. But Jesus seems to be saying, and I think and you could tease this out through other scriptures, if you're worried, if you're distracted, if you're doing 1,000 things, if you're physically and emotionally pulled all over the map, don't just do something, sit there at my feet. You see the juxtaposition of that? I just spit everywhere, by the way, sorry. You see that? The world says, go. Jesus says, stay. Be still. Know that I am God. And sometimes in my heart, in my life, that we're afraid sometimes of what we might see in the silence. So we see this. I'm going to give you 2 biblical principles and go through some practical, and then we're going to be done. But I need you to hear me this morning. This is not a simple plea for you to say, okay, David, you say I'm busy, I'm supposed to be less busy. No, if you hear that, hear my heart. If you hear, all you hear this morning is to say, be busy, clear your schedule, that's not the point. My point today, hear this, is not for you to think, I've got to clear my schedule. My point today is to say, get to the feet of Jesus and then deal with everything else. I'll talk about that in just a minute as I wrap up. And here's my point. 2 things, it'll be on the screen for you. If you're a note taker, this will be for you. 2 things get squeezed out of our lives when we get so busy. Number one is intimacy with God. Matthew 6:33 says, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness and all these things in the context of worry and anxiety. Okay, all these things that you're worried about, all these things that you're so chaos and hectic over, if you seek first the kingdom, seek first at the feet of Jesus, all this is going to take care of itself. Have you ever had someone tell you, I've kind of said this rhetorical question before, my life is so busy, my life is so hectic, but my walk with Jesus is as strong as it's ever been. Can I tell you this? Not once I've ever heard that in my whole life. Not once. And I'll also be so bold to say this. This is a really bold statement. I'll also say this. This idea of margin, I would say this. that you could almost, this is a look, just give me some leeway here, that this central issue, as we tease out with everything else that's coming through, is one of the central issues that Satan uses to distract us and to derail the body, to derail the church, to get people of God so stinking busy. And they're not even doing bad things. There's nothing innately, but they're so scattered, they're so encumbered, they're so spread out that it affects relationships. Did you see what happened with the sisters? They get ugly, they get divisive, they get spiteful, and all of a sudden now it's like it's affecting unity that we've been talking for 3 weeks about. It's affecting everything. But you're saying, Pastor, that's not real life. I even put that in my notes here. Charlie's working, he can tell me. He read the notes. I literally put, no, Pastor, that's unrealistic life. Do you believe that? Confession, sometimes I think it is. Sometimes I think that's too hard. Not in real life, Pastor. I can't stop this or do this or not do this. It's dangerous. So I just want you to hear. It's not about just trying to think, oh, got to clear the calendar out. Hey, we just had that happen for you. Number two, the other thing that's squeezed out is design peace and rest from God. Now, I could chase a whole series about Sabbath and rest, but I chose a text in Psalm 23 that I just wanted to quickly, very quickly, says this. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, and he leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul, he leads me to the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Let's stop there for just a minute. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. There is contentment. This is not a flattery illustration where David is describing us, or excuse me, the Lord is describing us as sheep. We're foolish. They're helpless. They're scattered around chasing anything and everything. But this idea of a shepherd, hear this, it refers to the comprehensive care of God. And why would we want to sit at the feet of God and to prioritize him? He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. Now, this may surprise you, but I'm not a big animal guy, okay? I don't do a lot of stuff with animals, but I can read about them, okay? I'm just kidding. Everything about it says that sheep will tell us that, you know this, that they're skittish, they wander off, they're utterly dependent on the shepherd. And David says, I'm so foolish, it's so for me too. I'm so foolish, I'm independent. Without the shepherd, I'm going to die. These green pastures are this fertile feeding ground. Sheep won't eat if they're anxious. If they're afraid, they won't take care of themselves. And David is saying, he's at peace. Oh, how we need that peace in our life. The still water, they can drink safely. They won't even drink from flowing waters. Sometimes the shepherd will kind of dig a little trench so the water will come by so that they can actually drink and have sustenance. Verse 3, he restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness. Literally translated quickly, he gives me my life back. God desires for his sheep, as silly as we can be, to flourish. And so my thought today, but I'm going to give you some five practical things if you want to write some stuff down. It's not for you to hear my voice and say, great, David, I'm going to stop being busy, or yes, I'm going to start trying to figure, I'll talk about that in a second, but think about this. I had a conversation with one of my best friends from college. I mentioned him a lot, and I mentioned at the very beginning of the series that I was praying through this idea of reset. Now, hear my heart on this morning. He lives in San Antonio, and you ever had one of your friends say something, and you're like, oh, I thought about it, and it's really not that profound, but it's kind of a paradigm change, hence the title. We were talking about stuff, and we were talking about this idea of scheduling and busyness, of how everything's been stripped away, and it's slowly coming back and trying to find something, and he stopped me. I was walking in here. I scare Tanya sometimes because I walk in here on the phone sometimes, and then it's kind of weird, but he said, David, can I tell you something 2 years ago that a friend of mine that told me, and it changed my world? I went, I mean, you can't not tell me now. That's like a... He said, I had a friend of mine that told me this 2 years ago, and it changed my life. Now, I don't want this to be anticlimactic, and you're going to say, oh, that's all, David, that's all you got? He said, well, what if, instead of worrying about what you need to let go of in your schedules or try to figure out, hey, do I need to say no to this? You know, that's a word we got to learn to we'll talk about that. Say no to something. He said, what if you lay it all down? And I was like, oh, gosh, here's the cheesy, you know, give me this, you know what, I already know. He goes, what if you, no, just literally lay it all down. What's been taken from you, What you can't make a decision about? He said, what if you just laid everything down and your decision was not what to let go of, but what's worthy to be picked back up? I went, oh. I literally said, oh. Because you know what's going to happen in this room? Some of you think, well, I have to. Yeah, there's things that you got to pick up. You can't just say no. Now, children, don't abuse this and think, hey, Dad, I can't take the trash out. Need a little margin in the life, you know? Did you hear the pastor? Can't mow the yard. Can't do the dishes. Need some margin. No, don't take this and abuse it. But there are definitely things in life that we cannot avoid. Don't tell your boss, can't come to work today. Pastor says I need some margin. There are things in life that we have to do. But there are some things that we have to prayerfully look at and think, that's not even a bad thing. That's a good thing. That's a fun thing. But is that worthy to be picked back up? I hope that you could hear that this morning, because I'm going to give you five things and we're done. There should be on. I think I got them. I think Charlie got them up there. Five things as we do this. If you're looking for practical things, number one is to assess yourself honestly. It's to basically say, I've got to look physically, emotionally, financially, spiritually. A lot of times we think we're okay, but we're really not. We kind of need to do number two as well. Look at number two, surround yourself and have some accountability. Someone who can speak into your life and say, hey, David, you're just all over the place. You're everywhere. Are you okay? The hard truth when we can't really see it. Number three, we got to learn to say no. Some of those extra things that we decide. Number four, we need to find some balance. If we add something, is there something else that we can kind of, maybe if this is worthy to be picked up, is there something else that we can try to find balance? And to be intentional, number five, with their whatever open or free time we have. Remember, margin is the amount allowed between what is needed, the amount allowed beyond what is needed. It's what we got left. It's what the things that we need and have to do. But what are we doing with this other time? I pray we don't dismiss it and think, David, I ain't got any options. I got nothing. Everything in my hands, I've got to be picked back up. I hope and I pray this morning, my desire is to not just say, let's clear the schedules out. It's been done for you, to be honest with you. But as we come out of this thing, as we make decisions on what to get back to, whatever normal is going to look like, we don't even know. But would you just commit to praying, saying, I need to pray through this. Is this worthy? If this is worthy, is it affecting everything else? Is it affecting relationships? We're going to talk next week about family discipleship, things in our families that we can do. Spiritual conversations that we can have. I can't tell you conversations I have with people that said, hey, you know, we've had time after listening to 8 weeks of online sermons that we've actually got to have conversations in our living room, praying with our kids about what the Lord's doing, instead of just going to lunch and leaving and then thinking, we didn't even talk about it. That's my confession to you. I've had more talks with my kids on sermons as the pastor than I ever did, because we get home and thinking, go do something, whatever, and we're just run. Good stuff. We'll talk about that coming up. But I just want you to understand this, that we get to the feet of Jesus, because that's where it's all going to start. Would you pray with me today? If you would, just take a deep breath and for just a minute. We're going to sing, but I just want to give you a little visual real quick before we're going to stand and sing. There's an old story of a Scandinavian statue that's of Jesus, and there's people that used to argue. Just every head bowed, every eye closed. Just listen for just a second and kind of give you a visual. It's a statue that people used to go, and they would go, and people that would be tourists, they would complain about it, and they'd say, well, you can't see Jesus' face. And some of the locals prided themselves, on correcting people when they would show up, and they'd say, yeah, you can't from here, but the only time you can see Jesus' face is if you're at his feet. You hear me this morning? Don't just sit here and think, well, I got to rearrange my schedule. No, just get to the feet of Jesus. That's it. He'll teach you and he'll show you, and be obedient with whatever he calls you to do. We want to see his face, let's get to his feet. So would you do that? You just pray in your own heart, in your own way. I'm not going to ask you to do anything. I just want you to pray, get to his feet. And as Jesus said to Mary, she's focused on the one thing. Could that be our heart as well? You pray and then we're going to stand and sing.